हरे ओ सहना वतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
सो ऑन Page 17, which I'm not sure if you have. No? You have?
Yeah,
now we have. You got it. Okay, very good. Okay. 216. Know that for whom the performance of the ceremonies, beginning with the rite of impregnation, garbhadhana, and ending with the funeral rite, antyeshti, is prescribed, while sacred formulas are being recited, is entitled to study these institutes. Right? So whoever would practice that, they're the ones who would study. Right? Like that. In other words, the twice born. So we squeak by simply because of the chanting Hare Krishna that qualifies us to follow the Pancharatrik system, which brings us, you know, gets us the Vedic connection. Otherwise, we would not be in this group. Right? Does that make sense? Right. Yeah. That land created by the gods which lies between the two divine rivers, Saraswati and Drishtavati, the sages called Brahmavarta. The custom handed down in regular succession since time immemorial among the four chief castes, Varna, and the mixed races of that country is called the conduct of virtuous men. Right. So Brahmavarta will mean that north-west corner of India, because the Saraswati went through what's, you know, now Punjab and that side. So, but, you know, I think it's actually within Pakistan now. So that area up there, that's where was the main Brahminical culture always was. It was always around the Saraswati River. But since it dried up, then the Brahmins have moved from there. So your Saraswati Brahmins that used to be there, then they came south. So one group went towards what's now your southern Maharashtra, northern Karnataka. That area, and another group went east, went to Bengal, and then from there, then went south or like this. So the ones that went south are called Saraswat Brahmins because that's what they were from. And those who came to Bengal first, then went, they're called Gaur Saraswat Brahmins, like that. So Rupa and Sanatan, they were Gaur Saraswat Brahmins. Their family was, you know, been in Bengal, had shifted to south. And then after so many generations, they came back. But they're from that group. The plain of the Kurus, the country of the Matsyas, Panchalas, and Surasenas, these form indeed the country of the Brahmarshis, Brahminical sages, which rank immediately after Brahmavarta. So that means your center is around the where the Ganga and the Jamuna, they create an island. You know, we don't think of it as an island, but it's an island between the two rivers. You know, Delhi and that side where the Kuru and all these others, it mentions Panchalas also. Yeah, Panchalas to the west of that. You know, so that area around there, you know, that would be those kingdoms, that was considered then it means immediately after, the Brahmarshis, the country of the Brahmarshis. So Brahmavarta, Brahmarshis. Then that's the next best area. That country which lies between the Himavat and the Vindhya Mountains, to the east of Prayag, and to the west of Vinashana, the place where the Saraswati disappears, is called Madhyadesh, the central region. So then if you count from the the Vindhya Mountains are in Madhya Pradesh, and then the Himalayas. So from the Himalayas down, so you're. And then up to like Rishikesh, farther east, over to where the ocean, where as you come up on India, the ocean, it comes up like at Gujarat, places like that. So is that where it'll end? So it means, in other words, that band from Gujarat up to like Himachal Pradesh, and then down the UP and that up to Prayag, means where the three rivers meet. So Allahabad, that would be then the next area. That's called Madhyadesh. But the track between those two mountains just mentioned, which extends as far as the eastern and western oceans, the wise call Aryavarta, the country of the Aryans. So that means along that line from Bengal, the Bay of Bengal, all the way to the Indian Ocean. So that would be considered the next best areas. That's the full area where generally one would say is those who are, you know, the serious followers of the Vedic culture would reside. That's their traditional area.
So that's from Bengal to the other side?
It means if you start in Bengal, means because you have the Vindhya Mountains and the Himalayas, and where the Ganga goes. So it goes from the Bay of Bengal, goes up between these two, and goes to the Indian Ocean. Yeah. So it would be and then what's there up to where that area of the Saraswati. So in other words, all the areas before mentioned, but going all the way down to Bengal. So it's that strip of like that. So that's considered that's Aryavarta, where all the Aryans live, meaning those who follow and practice Vedic culture, they live there. Because south of that would be the Dravidians. Right, and except for the sages who are in the Himalayas and other tracts of land, then generally those are all, they tend to be a bit tribalish, like that. And then as you go farther west than that, or farther east than that, then also there's, you know, the element of the culture, but and they that means if you go back, then they would all be under the Vedic rule, but they would have their own local customs and practice in that, so it wouldn't necessarily. They would not necessarily be the best teachers or students of the Vedic, of Manu. So it's mainly saying that someone from this area, they would have the heritage that they would understand this culture, right? Does that make sense? Because it's been practiced. Their family practices, their forefathers, everybody practiced it. So they could explain it very nicely. They could get into detail. They've seen it. The main important thing is you've seen it. Does that make sense? Because then it's alive for you. It's not just a theory. Does that make sense?
These would be like Manipur or even further?
No. It would generally start to come down this way because Manipur was, Narottam went and he sent a disciple. I mean, he may have gone there, but specifically, I forget his name. But he was a disciple of Narottam Das Thakur. He went there because other than that, before that, they were all tribals. Basically, even Bengal is just on the edge because it's called it means parts of it, Radadesh, where the Ganga doesn't flow. Because they were all tantrics. Assam, that side, they were all tantrics. So the Vaishnava cult. So they would have a connection to the Vedic, but it wasn't as good. That's why it was better. As it goes back that way, it gets better. But with Lord Chaitanya coming, then it basically almost reverses, you know. But as far as these rules of the culture, then, you know, that still applies. That land where the black antelope naturally roams, one must know to be fit for the performance of sacrifice. Right? Is that also? So that's generally, it means where they live, that's the area. Because then in other places they don't go, because the Brahmins use the black antelope. Like that. That's the skin that they use. Right? Then it mentions in small print, the tract different from that is the country of the Mlechans, the barbarians. So that means any other place, yes. So. Okay. Okay, so best thing is that the reason that's good is because the people there study and practice the Vedic culture. So the recommendation of Manu is wherever that's happening, that's the place that someone who is serious about, you know, God consciousness should live, right? One should associate with such persons. Thus concludes the origin of sacred law, and it has been thus has the origin of the sacred law been succinctly described to you, and the origin of the universe. Learn now the duties of the Varnas. Okay, so that's section one. That's the first module. So then part two, this is Ashram Dharma. So it'll start with the rule of the sacraments, as we said, is that the dvija means the sacraments are there. With holy rites prescribed by the Veda, must the ceremony on conception and other sacraments be performed for twice born men, which sanctify the body and purify from sin in this life and after death. Srila Prabhupada states, so, samskarad bhavet dvijaha. By reformation, by following the regulative principle of how to elevate oneself to the knowledge of Brahman, that is called samskara. Right? So that's the point of samskara. It's the regulative principle of how to elevate oneself to the knowledge of Brahman. So if someone says, oh, it's just ritual, then what does that mean? And since when is ritual a bad thing, right? When two people meet, how do you greet? Right? Devotees, you know, it's Hari Bol, or you're Australian, Vanchas Prabhu, Vanchas, you know, something like that. You know, something's done. But, you know, Westerners will shake hands or something like that. That's just a ritual. Anybody can explain why shake hands? You know, why the right hand? Why not? Why? Where does it come from? No one can explain. So not only is it a ritual, but it's a pure sentiment, because no one can even explain what it is, how it works. But those are fine. Right? So that's the thing, is that rituals that are just part of our conditioning, we think are nice. Rituals that's not part of our conditioning, we'll say, oh, that's just a ritual. But the point is conditioning means you function on rituals. That's the way it is. Right? That's how you get cliches, because people always do things in a certain way. Right? So, yeah. There are 10 kinds of samskaras, reformatory. This Vedic system is a very scientific system to elevate the humankind to the highest perfection of life. So, samskarad bhavet dvijaha. Then, when the samskar is given, the spiritual master sees that, this boy is now competent to study Vedas. That requires a qualification. A Shudra is not allowed to study the Vedas. There is restriction. Sometimes they think injustice, that why Shudras? That is modern convention. Actually, that is very nice. What a Shudra can understand the Vedas? To the Shudras, a different kind of knowledge. Lecture on Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.10. Sikashudra means artist. So for the artist, then the Vedic ritual. Because when we say Vedic, we don't mean philosophy here. You know, in this case, where we're dividing because we're considering conditioning. Right? When we generally say the Vedas, we mean the philosophy, like Bhagavatam. But when we're considering conditioning, conditioning doesn't apply to Bhagavatam or Gita or Mahabharata like this. So the philosophy, that's not what we're talking about, or nectar devotion, or these aspects. What we're talking about is occupation. Right? You know, if someone is qualified for one area, why would he study another? Like that. Just interest, that's one thing. But then the point is what will he do with it? The Vedas are meant to be used, to be applied. So the difficulty is it's a lot of trouble. It means you have, like we said, each word has six aspects that have to be correct. They're not correct, the mantra doesn't function. Does that make sense? You know, just like Gayatri. The holy name, you chant it properly or not, you're getting benefit. But the Gayatris, unless you're qualified, they don't work. Right? Unless that element of the mode of goodness is there, unless that concept, it doesn't work. Because it's nam atmika. The holy name is its life. It's not the holy name itself, but because it contains names, but because of the formulas, It requires the mode of goodness. That's why anybody can chant, but it's only second initiation, then those mantras are good. Right? And because for us, we're using it from Pancharatra. Therefore, if you have the samskar of Pancharatra, that changes the purity of the form, so one is qualified to chant. But we're chanting them according to classical Sanskrit. Right? Is anybody here chanting them with the actual Vedic swaras? No. So that's the whole point, but that they're working. But the Vedic mantras only work if you use the Vedic swaras. You know what I'm saying? So the time it takes to learn that is very long. So the tendency is the artist, since you need constant mental inspiration and stimulation, it doesn't provide that. It's just you're learning them by rote. You know, and then after that you study their meaning. Does that make sense? And they have to be exact. It's not that, well, it doesn't matter if I'm exact on it, or if it would sound better if we did it this way. You know, that you can't apply that. That's why then it says artists don't study that. That's all. So that's the point. But anything else, that's not a problem. Yes.
You mean the Tao mantras, the Vajra, we get the Pancharatra rules?
So we're getting them through Pancharatra, so that's our authorization.
So they don't require such precision in chanting?
Not exactly.
What do you mean when you say that Vedic svaras and everything, if we don't apply it?
Means the Vedic means you're learning a samskar, or you're learning these different means. When you study Veda, means you memorize the Veda, but you have to memorize it exactly as it is. Just like, okay, let's give an example. The guys that write the Torah, right? Then they have the whole thing memorized. They could sit down from memory, write it out. But do they do that? No, they look at one letter, write one letter. Look at the next letter, write the next letter. They have it memorized, but that's how it works. So would an artist do that? No. So who's doing it? Their rabbis are doing it, right? Because an artist would just, you know, what does it matter? You know, and that thing is like that. Well, hey, we could put a little few other things in there, and, you know, put a few birds and flying, you know, why don't we do it in Technicolor? You know, it's not going to fly. So that's the whole point, is the Veda is not studied by the artist because there is no artistic expression. Zero. It's not meant for that. It's just meant to be exact in the ritual. The mantra has power. And so if it's delivered in that way, it does. Your art is in how you set up, you know, the yagshala and other decorations and arrangements. That the artist can do. So that's where they can shine and do something nice. In other words, the presentation of the whole thing, that they can do. But the actual ritual has to be exact. It's very, and it's like that. Every time you do it, it's exactly the same way. It doesn't change. You know what I'm saying? So it's not according to the nature of how an artist would like it. Artists like variety. They like to be able to adjust it. You know, just like an Indian artist, when they play the music, it's the same raga, the same notes, they have the same patterns, but every time they play it, it'll never be played the same twice. Like that. If you went to a concert and heard it, it's never going to be the same again. It's just, that's the way it is. It's just, you know, because you could move from those notes and do it in so many ways. So they'll bring out all those things, and they'll do here, then they'll go back over here, then come back, and then do this. And so you can do whatever you like. Does that make sense? And that's where the art is. That's what the art brings out, the fine points of the human existence, human interaction, all those things. But still, the ritual is important for creating the framework. So the framework is created, therefore, by the Brahmins and the Dvijas, and especially the Brahmins. But the variety is created by the Shudras. Does that make sense? So it's just who's good at what. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
So it appears also that it is mentioned sometimes that shudras, they're not allowed to study Veda.
Yes.
But actually, they have no attraction as such.
There's no interest. Because otherwise, why would you do something that has to be done exactly that way and has no personal expression? There would be no interest. And if there was a sincere interest, then they were something different. Like the kid on the roof. Right? Like that. It was something different. Does that make sense? Yeah, and it's recognized. Because otherwise, why would there be such an interest? Like that. You know, it's just like, what is his name? Satyakama Jabala. He went to Gotama and asked him if he could be his disciple. He says, okay, what's your Gotra? You know, he just went in those backgrounds and says, I don't know. You know? So he said, you know, so then, you know, he says, I'll go ask my mother. So he went back, asked his mother. His mother said, I really wouldn't know. Like that, so many men come and visit that I don't know who it is. Right? So Jabala went back to Gotama and said, well, I asked my mom, and she says she doesn't know because so many men come, she wouldn't know what the Gotra is. Like that. So Gotama says, okay, I'll accept you as a disciple. Because only a Brahmin would tell the truth. Because a Kshatriya wouldn't because of prestige. Vaishya wouldn't because he was afraid, you know, he wouldn't get accepted. You know, like that. And so then he says, you know, so you're Brahmin. So therefore he was known as Satyakama. You know, who, you know, means one who, you know, is fixed in truth. So he's one of the examples of one who, you know, attained Brahman realization. And the fun part is he did that by Gotama told him, there's 600 cows, take them out in the field, come back when there's 1,000. So by sitting out there watching the cows and contemplating instructions he had heard from Gotama Rishi, he became self-realized. Therefore, you know, so the Vedic is not by birth, you know, it's by qualification. But the thing is generally someone who has the qualifications come because of these elements, because they're very, that's what it says, it's very scientific. If you follow these, it generally works. But even if you follow these, if you don't have the nature, you're not accepted in that capacity. Yes?
It said that we, in the beginning, you mentioned that we study this for the mercy of the Holy Name in the process of
becoming. Yes.
Once we have been accepted, then the natural process would be to progress and qualify.
Yes. In other words, we may not have come into it by all these different, you know, scientific, we may not have been so scientifically raised, you know, like that, but it doesn't mean that then we don't appreciate it and then apply that for our children. You know what I'm saying? You have, you know, so many very wealthy families. The original patriarch was, you know, poor. You know, he's got some really sad story, but he got it together, made money, but his children are poor. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Yes?
Isn't there also the element that the Sudra will tend to see the form of the ritual as the important thing and therefore will have difficulty?
Yes, no, that would be there. But you can get that with anybody because, see, yes, you would have that thing because the Sudra, his basis will be on the mind. Like, because if we take it by the Varnas, then Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, then they'll be, you know, basically in the masculine position, Sudras will be in the feminine. So the tendency would to be the mind would be the prominent element. So that will be there. You know. But same time as between the others, then the Brahman is the masculine, the others are, you know what I'm saying, it keeps adjusting. So the idea is that, you know, there wouldn't be so much of there wouldn't be an interest. But we by like Prabhupada says, he made our fortune. It's not that I was a seeker and this and no, Prabhupada made our fortune because, you know, what were we getting by our seeking, right? So when Prabhupada came, then there was something real to seek, right? Then like that. Okay. By birth, oblations during the mother's pregnancy. By the Jata Karma, the ceremony after birth. The Choda, Tansur, and the Mangi Banta, the tying of the sacred girdle of Munja grass, is the taint derived from both parents removed from the twice-born men. In other words, as we said, the consciousness is there by the parents. Through these samskaras, whatever impurities are there from the parents' consciousness is purified in the child. Then, by the study of the Veda, by vows, by burnt oblations, by the recitation of sacred texts, by the acquisition of the threefold sacred science, by offering to the gods, rishis, and manes, by the procreation of sons, by the great sacrifices, and by Shrauta rites, this human body is made fit for union with Brahman. So these ones then make one remove any impurities that are there that you've gained from your parents, that you share with the parents, and by these others then is what will advance you further in human development. Riti. The threefold sacred science can be understood as the three Vedas, Rig, Yajur, and Sama Vedas, or it can refer to the combination of the Veda, the body of the Vedic literatures, philosophy, the science of transcendence, and Dharma Shastra. Because technically you can fit everything into those. Because Veda include the Vedangas. Right? And then the philosophy is the transcendental knowledge, and Dharma would include everything else. Okay. You know, in other words, the civics. So Vedic philosophy, Vedic civics, and Vedic sciences. So those can also be the threefold science. Either. So the early rites. So now going through them. Before the navel string is cut, the Jata Karman, birthright, must be performed for a male child. And while sacred mantras are being recited, he must be fed with gold, honey, and butter. Briti, being probably fed with gold, honey, and butter nourishes the intelligence of the newborn child. If this is performed, then it's something that will manifest later. It's like, because then they'll have the qualifications for appreciating the Veda, like that. So there's so many of these kind of things. Like here is that, the interesting thing here is now, before the navel string is cut, right? Because generally in the modern, as soon as the kid is born, the first thing you do is cut the umbilical cord. And then, you know, like this. But the interesting thing is the blood still flows for about 5 minutes, 10 minutes. And they're just finding now in the last couple of years that this blood that flows is the most far out things. They're making all these stem cells and everything for cancer, this, that, blah. But it's never once crossed any of their fat heads that maybe that's good for the baby. Just think. Now they're thinking, if I get some of this and then I put it in a petri dish and grow some stuff, I can help people. What happens if that went into the kid? You know, how strong and healthy they'd be. You know, so it's science. So therefore, after he's born and you clean him up, right, but you don't cut the umbilical cord. Then you come and say the mantras and give the gold and all that. But that means, though, that few minutes has gone by. Then when you cut the umbilical cord, there's no problem.
Would that be the midwife that does that?
Does what?
Well, before gives the gold and the honey and the butter.
No. That's the husband and the whatever is with his crew. The midwife doesn't do that stuff. She takes care of the umbilical cord.
Yeah, I know, but if it's still joined, and then I'm just thinking.
I mean, I don't know that much, but I think it's not so short.
Not so long either.
Yeah, but the point is this: it's
long enough.
Yeah, it's long enough in other words, is born. He gives all that, then he gives the child to the mother. Like that. So then it's. But let the father perform or cause to be performed the Namadeya, the rite of naming the child, on the 10th or 12th day after birth, or on an auspicious lunar day in an auspicious muhurta, under an auspicious constellation. So you'd use that 10th or 12th. If there's something else that doesn't match there, then you can pick another, just, you know, very auspicious. Why you'd be very careful about the auspicious, because the Namakaran is done according to the syllable that matches the planet you're born from. So it's an astrological consideration. Therefore, you want to see all the astrological aspects are correct. Then let a Brahman's name denote something auspicious. Right? like that, because that's generally all we do is with the devotional element. But otherwise, here Kshatriya should be connected with power. You know, like I say this one, the lion-hearted, or like that, or even the terrible, right?
So,
right. So
the devotees, whatever is connected with Krishna, the
main. Yeah, because then that's auspicious. It means whatever is connected with Krishna is devotees, then that's auspicious.
So,
yeah.
Then, so it doesn't matter the.
Generally, you would, because that means your body is functioning under the mode. So then you do accordingly. That's why you see Prabhupada would generally leave whatever's the first syllable of their non-devotional name. He would pick a name based on that, because you're given a name according to the nakshatra. So therefore, you'd use that first. It's the first syllable that's important, and so according to that, then. They wouldn't. But the point is, this is by your karma. That's what you got. So you know. So you are what you are because of that. So it's the same principle. It's just unscientific. You know, like that. But you know, it may be something auspicious. You know, like how you say. I mean, it's been so long. But you know, some of these things. You know, joy.
You know. Angel.
Huh? Angel, yes. You know, yeah, these kind of, you know, you get things that are auspicious. It works. The names of women should be easy to pronounce, possess a simple meaning, be pleasing and auspicious, and end in long vowels. Like you see, like you have Krishna, but then Draupadi is Krishna. Right? It's long. So you see always the feminine names that always end in a long vowel. Right? And it mentions it shouldn't be, not imply anything dreadful. Right? So you don't have Susan the Terrible.
And would you say the longer the name is better?
The longer the better.
Yeah. Means if it's.
So are you talking about those from a Hispanic background? Like the biggest, or you know, that. Or let's say, it's Hispanic. Latin background. I mean, the biggest name I ever saw was, you know, Pablo Picasso. It takes up half a page. You know, like that. So you mean like that, or?
No, I composed of two words. If it's
no, it doesn't matter that. Because you also have to remember, what are they going to call her?
Yeah, just
shorten it. Yeah, because everyone's going to shorten it.
Right.
Know? Who's going to call her by... I remember my brahmachari name, that I remember, may have Bhavananda and... Who's the Kashmiri Swami?
Navagyogendra.
Those are the only ones that would say the whole name. Everybody else shortened it down as short as it could get. Yeah. Like that, you know. I mean, your perfect—at least your Australian perfection—is one syllable. You know, that's like Nitai Chan became Nitz. That's what the Aussies would call him. You know, like that. You know, Bhavananda's Bavs. You know, Shatadanya is Shuts. You know, it's like one syllable. I mean, you know. Why waste your time? And right? I second. So therefore, it's always something nice, pleasing. It means one, of course, it's auspicious, but it's something that's pleasing, not easy to pronounce. Right? The boys might have more complicated names. They're auspicious, but you may not like that. But the girls' name should be very nice, easy to pronounce, pleasant sounding, like that. That's right. Riti. In choosing a name for a child, the position of the moon at the time of birth should be considered. Each of the 27 constellations is represented by a particular group of syllables, and an appropriate name should be selected that begins with the syllable associated with the constellation that the moon is residing in. Right? Because the moon is what controls the mind. Who controls the moon? Of course, ultimately Krishna, but in day-to-day life. Right, the man runs the family. Who controls the man?
The wife.
The wife, right? And the nakshatras are the wives of
moon.
Right. So therefore, nakshatras are used. Right? Choosing a name based on this astrological syllable enhances the auspicious influence from the planets for the child. Right? So it's scientific. It just makes, because the child is not, we can say, well, we chant Hare Krishna. It says, yeah, your 2 week old baby's chanting, you know. How many? 64 rounds? Right, it's got nothing else to do. Right? So, like that. So, therefore, it's scientific that they get the most benefit. In the fourth month, the nishkramana, the first leaving of the house of the child, should be performed. In the sixth month, the anaprasana, first feeding with rice, and optionally any other auspicious ceremony required by the custom of the family. Because it's going through the main 10, but there are 48 samskars. So some people, by traditions, follow some of them, some of this and that. So they're not actually important, but if they're there and it's the tradition of the family, then if that's the time, then you follow. It's not a problem. That's when you put it in. These beginning ones are set, but as it goes on, then people put other things in. Vritti. According to tradition, the mother of the child-to-be goes to her mother's house to be cared for just before, during, and after childbirth. The mother and child then continue their stay for another 3 months after delivery, so they may both become stable in health. In the beginning of the fourth month, the mother and child return to their own home, where the father of the child performs the ceremony of nishkramana. This rite of passage is to establish both stability in health and ability of the child to remain at a fixed residence throughout his life. Right? Regularity is the foundation for a healthy and peaceful life, and this samskara helps to establish that in the child's life. Right? Like you see sometimes, you have these, elder persons who either are from some background that creates regulation, like military or something, or they live in a more rural kind of environment. Even though their diet and lifestyle wouldn't be something we'd recommend, right? But it's regular. Every day at the same time, they take the same cup of coffee, they eat the same this, they do the same that, day in, day out, for as long as, anybody's known them, so it means at least, from the dinosaur age or something like that, because generally before that, it's more hit and miss, you might have been eaten by them. And there's not necessarily people left from that time. So, but it's a regulation that creates it, it's not what they're eating, it's a regulation. So the idea is that this creates that regulation. Because otherwise, if there's too much moving around, then the child won't be stable. Because that's the very beginning, so much influence, there's a stable environment, very peaceful, everybody's comfortable. So then he'll be comfortable just being in one place. Because if you notice that, especially those from an urban environment, they're not necessarily comfortable staying in one place. Take everything, sell everything, move to Mayapur, this is it, we're here, and everything like that. And then, 6 months to 3 years later, what happened to them? They're gone. And then you ask some other, they moved to this place. And you ask them, they're there? Oh, no, they came and stayed for this place. Then they moved to them. They just can't stay because this samskara is missing. Yes. Right, but you see, village people stay in the village. Why? Because they're born there and they just stay there, so they don't go anywhere.
So for them, like, if the mother stays for 3 months.
Three months. You say that with. I catch that there's some.
No, I try to imagine myself staying in the apartment for 3 months without getting out. It's really hard.
Well, traditionally there was the ancestral home.
Yeah, so it was this, something.
It was some
enough space to move.
But nowadays it's that we've decided that how you say 5 square feet is good enough to live in. But before it was you had But in any case, the point is where are you going to go? With the baby. So, what about the baby?
The relatives.
I guess the father could take the baby out after 4 months or something like that.
No, inside. The baby stays inside, but mothers, for the baby to stay 3 months in the apartment, they don't care, usually. the mother could stay there. No, I see devotees, I've never heard
Somehow another, it's kind of starting to go back to these ones about Brahmavarta and... because they've never done it. So the idea of sitting in one place with people who you have affection for isn't on their agenda. You know what I'm saying? The idea is that relationship is based on the third party. But actually human relationships don't need a third party. They can be direct. But most you see in the modern culture, who has a direct relationship? You know, families are going to be together, so what do they do? Are they going to watch a movie or this? First they'll fight over it, and then if they don't kill each other and they're still agreeable to watch the movie, then they all watch, you know, like that. You know, or they'll go to Disneyland, or they'll go out to the water park, or, you know, does that make sense? They have to do something else. But you see these old families, they could just all sit together and be happy together, just that they're all together. You know what I'm saying? So it's not that what is being suggested here is a problem. The problem is we're not the caliber of material that is being suggested to work with. Does that make sense? Like, just for fun, I haven't seen, of those who I've known have been connected with us that are from the second generation, they have no problem with sitting at home for 3 months with their baby. Absolutely no problem. Because all the kids that were connected with us when they had kids, that was for them not a problem to do at all. Right, because and they say the bonding and everything is so great, and you know all these different things. So it's just because, you know, it's just the background's different. You know what I'm saying? As first generation, we're not what you call ideal. So then these things may seem strange to us, but for the next generations, they're not actually very strange at all. You know what I'm saying?
Get accustomed to the idea beforehand.
Yeah, the point is, if you know this is what it is, then you know you'll stock up, you know, get your, you know, high-speed internet connection, and you know, get everything lined up. So then it'll make it much easier. You know, like that. So, but if you suddenly stuck with that, and after the baby, you say, "Oh, you got it. Oh no," you know, it's like that. You know, whose house? You know. Yeah, so that's all. It just creates that health and stability. Because if you notice with time, you always that it means I'm always impressed with what volume of children and to what degree they have this whole long list of ailments. You know, and they're, you know, very young. Ailments. Sicknesses. You know, they have this intolerance and that, you know, this and so many different things. It's just getting more and more as time goes. But before, kids were basically pretty healthy. You know, people died because they didn't have any medicine for it. But if you'd had medicine at that time, the people in general were much more healthy. You know?
This point they mentioned about staying at the mother's house.
Means your own mother, not your mother-in-law.
Okay. Where, so the husband and wife are not together? Is this the baby
there? No, that means they'd all go there.
Do
they
have
no, that's not a problem. It's just, I mean, it's not a problem for... yeah, I mean, they go there. But I mean, a lot of times they might go there on their own. So the husband will continue whatever he's doing, and then he comes and visits and stuff like that. But it's just that... In other words, the mother, the daughter, is going to take care nicely, right? And so, and it's the father's house, so therefore she's always welcome and everything. So it's nice. That's the time that they get to spend. That's their serious time. Not that they claim later that, oh, we never get any time. That's their time. You know, everybody gets their time. According to Ayurveda, proper digestion is the root of good health. Therefore, in the Anaprasana ceremony, the Lord is recognized as Vaishvanara, the fire of digestion. By this observance, the child's digestion and overall good health are enhanced. So that's why Anaprasana. Because your health is based on your assimilation, which is based on your digestion. Right? It means if you fully digest something, then you can fully assimilate it. But if it's only partially digested, when you assimilate it, you'll assimilate the nutrients and what's, you know, the poisons. So then the problem is the poisons will move around in the body, and whatever's, and if it's strong, it'll just keep going. But if there's any weakness, they'll collect there. And then when enough collects there, then you get that particular problem. So that's why then anaprasana is important.
Does that mean that grains are only offered the first time after the fourth month?
Sixth. Yeah. It means this is a male child. The girl, it'll be either the fifth or seventh. Because either the girls will grow quicker or slower. Because it's when the teeth appear. So if their teeth appear early, then it's at the fifth. If they don't, then at the seventh. Okay. According to the teaching of the revealed text, the Chuda Karma Tantra must be performed for the sake of spiritual merit by all twice-born men in the first or third year. The hair one is born was considered impure, therefore in the Chuda Karma ceremony the head is shaved so as to develop purity. So the first year is there, or it can be the third. So if the head, you know, all the bones are, you know, put are solid and all that, then the first year. If not, then you would choose the third year. Right? Who's done that? Yeah. No? Okay. The initiation of a Brahmin who desires proficiency in sacred learning should take place in the fifth year. Like, and you're getting it good, because if you notice what's in brackets? After conception. Because in the Vedic concept is when you're conceived, that's when you're alive from there. So the first year is, you know, you're considered 1 year old when you're born. Like that. So in the Vedic times, when you make the chart, you'd make it off the time of conception. You could also make one off the time of birth, just you know, like that. But if you're conceived at an auspicious time, you'd be born like that. It just, you don't have to worry. I remember one devotee who was really into astrology. He was so worried because I think the birth was late or something, so they had planned they would, you know, conceived here and then born in this auspicious, that it went on another month and that. And then he's freaking out because everything was inauspicious and this and that. He doesn't know. And then after the child was born, when he calculated, there was a 5-minute window when all the planets adjusted and everything was very auspicious. But everything before that and after that wasn't. But because the child was conceived in an auspicious time, he was born in one. So one doesn't have to worry, yes.
Does anyone ever calculate the spiritual birth initiation?
You could, but because it's a spiritual thing, the planets don't really have bearing on it. Because they have bearing up to liberation, up to, not the liberation itself. That means that they can tell at this point you will leave the universe. But they can't tell, you know, what that meant, you know, where you went or, you know, you just stepped out for, you know, I used to say some fresh air or something like that. You know, that they can't tell. Like that. So in the fifth year, after conception, so that would mean in the fourth year, technically. But you know, these days, you know, fifth is fine. And that of the Kshatriya wishes to become powerful in the sixth. And that of a Vaishya who longs for success in his business in the eighth. So therefore, if you want proficiency within the occupation, you would use these earlier times, like that. But otherwise, then it can be here. It says the eighth after conception for a Brahmin, the 11th for a Kshatriya, and the 12th of a Vaishya. That would be the latest you'd want to go. But then they won't be necessarily so proficient in these things, because they won't get the qualification. They won't have the character. Because in all three you need character, right? So I think there's been one book, may have been out of, I can't remember, one book that one of these big, you know, business gurus wrote was about what they don't teach you in the Harvard School of Business. And his whole point was they don't teach you character. Because even, it means you have the opportunity to do, make a business through, you require character to be able to stick to a plan. Because otherwise, there's always thinking, well, maybe I can make some quicker profit. There's always the mind will trick you. So to be fixed and to be able to go through, you require character. So he says, that they'll never teach him. So that's why the earlier he comes, then he'll be proficient in business. Or the Kshatriya will be powerful because his qualities are greater. Or the Brahmin will be more proficiency in sacred knowledge because he started earlier, has the character, and so therefore he studied longer. Right? So that's why Bhavi says scientific. Right? The time of the Savitri does not pass until the completion of the 16th year. Right? So here it's also, so if you're taking the element, is that we're coming into this because of the Bhagavat and the Pancharatrik. So we're only qualifying because of the Brahminical qualification that comes from these other three. So we see as we go through the paper, we're keeping the Brahminical considerations for when we're dealing with the Brahmacharis, like that. And so then within this time, then the Upanayana should be completed. But if you're getting it from the Pancharatrik, then it doesn't matter. Because that's how we get it. Because otherwise, if you haven't gone by 16, you're considered fallen. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. Riti. Here in the time for Upanayana is prescribed for a Brahman, they may receive Upanayana up until they complete the 16th year. For Kshatriya, until the end of the 22nd. For a Vaishya, until the completion of the 24th. After expire of that period, they may only receive the Brahma Gayatri after receiving full Pancharatrika initiation, both first and second, from the bona fide spiritual master. Right? So technically, if they don't receive in that time, they're considered outcasts. Because then they're not... I mean, why wouldn't they qualify? Right? If the person had a Brahminical nature, why wouldn't he qualify by that time? Because if he didn't, it means his nature is not Brahminical. Is that... The dress. Let students, according to the order of their caste, wear as upper dresses the skins of black antelope, spotted deer, and he-goats. Right? According to the Sakriya Sardipika of Srila Gopabhati Goswami, the deer skin embodies the light of the sun. Right? So in other words, illuminating knowledge, it represents that. The girdle shall consist of a triple cord of munja grass, smooth and soft. If munja grass and so far be not procurable, the girdles may be made of kusa, with a single threefold knot, or with three or five knots, according to the custom of the family, so depending on the background. Otherwise, just a simple knot. Right? What do you call it? The threefold knot. Single threefold. You tie the knot, and then you tie the two ends, so that they don't go all over the place. The sacrificial string shall be made of cotton, shall be twisted to the right, and consist of three threads. Brahma shall carry, according to the sacred law, stav of bilva, or palash, a Kshatriya, a Vata or Kadira, and a Vaishya, Pilu or Udumbara. Like that. But since the last time we went through this, we got an unsavory harassment by a family that somehow or another considered that their child was dealt with in the wrong stick. So now, if you notice that here, there's these bamboo sticks in the martial arts set, that's what everyone's going to get from now on. We're not going to bother with these like that. So then at least they can use it in the martial arts class, so no one can complain. Right? The staff of Brahma shall be made of such a length as to reach the end of his hair. That means where your hair stops, like that. You know, the Kshatriya to the forehead, and the Vaishya to the tip of the nose. Let all staves be straight, without blemish, handsome to look at, and not likely to terrify men. With their bark perfect, unhurt by fire. Right. So these will be straight, they'll reach the end of the hair, because that's the size you need it for the martial arts. Having taken a staff, according to his choice, having worshipped the sun and walked around the fire, turning his right hand towards it, the student should beg alms according to the prescribed rule. Riti, walking around the fire means respectful circumambulation. Keeping the right hand towards the fire means walking clockwise. Yes.
Why Brahmas give staffs?
Staffs.
Why Brahmas?
Why not?
Is it for martial arts?
Dronacharya didn't know martial arts. Parasuram didn't know martial arts.
But they put their exceptions.
We have a lot of exceptions.
So what's the difference between them and Kshatriyas then?
Why they do it.
They teach it.
Basically. They teach, you know, for self-preservation. But the point is that Kshatriyas is for power, Vaishyas is for prestige. You know what I'm saying? Vaishyas, it looks good, you look good to the girls, you know, so then they like it. So, you know, everybody wins. So, but the point is it's there. It's one of the things that develops the body, and it's... But parents complain a lot about exercise. What exercise do they do, right? Only because, you know, in the school they had PE. So, it means they could be playing, you know, basketball or this and that or doing all the running or other things. Basically a waste of time. You put in the same energy into the martial arts, at least you learn something, you can do something with it, right? Does that make sense? You know, because devotees are talking about, it creates, team spirit, team cooperation. I haven't seen that. If that's the thing, most of our senior devotees have played sports when they were in high school and junior high. I don't see it. You know, so I'm not buying it. You know, so like that. You know, I've seen this when, but if the kids play Indian games, that happens. But if they play any Western game, it just does not happen. You know, generally, rarely ever see the kids playing soccer or football or whatever, depending where you're from, what you call it. Because somehow or another, the consciousness is all down in the feet, and they get so rough. It means the same kids that always speak nicer, they're all swearing and everything, you know, and if somebody does something wrong, yelling and screaming, they play any other game, they don't do that. So we've allowed them to play a couple of times, then we had to ban it, then it started that, now it's basically okay, they don't get too serious about it, but... But with the martial arts, nobody cares about these other games, really. You know, so, but you can do something with it. At least there's something about it. These other things. So now no one bothers us about physical education anymore. Okay. So then that ends that. Then we start with the rules of begging and eating. So you can see is that even the cut down version has so many elements. You know what I'm saying? So now compare this from how much Prabhupada was saying was in general important. Right? So you can understand, especially as we go farther. It means this is just brahmacharis. They're like some way to get into the grihastha. Then when devotees will say, oh, this is so ritualistic or this is so impossible. No, that's the easy stuff. That's like it's like the rules that you could have for, you know, following on the fast days, you know, or Ekadasi or what do you call it? The Chaturmasya, yeah. So then that's got 44 main rules. Then there's a whole bunch of supplementary rules. Like that. But Lord Chaitanya simply said, you know, in this month no milk, in this one no yogurt, no spinach, and no four. Four. And that's so ritualistic. So four instead of about 50. Right? So that's the thing. As you see is that it's very simple. You know, everybody puts on a dhoti and they have their chudder and they have their Brahmin thread. As long as it basically looks like a Brahmin thread, everybody's happy. Right? You know? But means for, you know, here you don't so much. But I've been out on the train. And I've had local Brahmins come up, and you know, because it's there, and you can see it from the back. Come up, take the thread, and start counting the threads to see how many are there. Yeah, because it's like that. Because you also have in local, like the Brahmachari only wears three, in the Vedic concept. But in Bengal, everyone wears nine because they go by, you know, each one represents the nine qualities of a devotee. But it's still in the sets of three. So if you don't, Bengal is just nine. It doesn't matter who you are. You know, if you're Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas, it doesn't matter. It's nine. So they wanted to check that it was nine. So otherwise, there we always wear nine. You know, but you know, the Vedic thing, then Brahmacharis wear three. Right? The reason they'd wear six because the other three are for the wife. If you're doing puja, then you have another three. That's for doing puja. It means because it's the upper cloth. Just in case something happens and you don't have one and you have to do something. So then that would be how Bengal got nine, but they couldn't explain it, so then they just said nine qualities of devotees. But that would be the standard. A Pujari Brahmin would wear nine. If he's not doing puja and that, then he'd wear six.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivedanta ki, Chaitanya Gaura.